accession number 29909, reel 6.
Could you describe what Basra was like at the time?
Basra? Bloody hot. 145. You get a camp scene, it's worse. What is, you know, when the heat come across, you're buggered because they give you Nivea cream for your lips and stuff, you know, because it was hot. Christmas time, 145. And you just laid, you know, it was so hot. And I told you, I was there for a while. And then we got called, me and Jim, to go to Persia. And there again, don't ask me why, I turned around, discard any military gear. I lost my rifle, I had all that taken away. And if there was any military gear, discard it. And two jeeps with these here, I don't know who they were, I went with, or me and him went with, drove into Persia with the two jeeps. There I saw that mile of blooming refugees coming out of a camp, you know, with these here poles and women and children. I was more interested in them poor buggers. Well, I didn't know what was going on in Persia, what they were dealing with, what it was about. I haven't got a clue. Because I say, you're never told, you know, do this, do that, but you never get the reason of why you're doing it. It seems so stupid. And then, of course, I went from there back to Basra, and I went to say Basra, Damascus, Syria, and round that way. There I met this here EF&G, Experimental Demolition Company, where I met Major Rodwell. And, yeah, from a fanatic, he was Christ. We had involved commander school, airborne school, and then we went round upsetting the poor blooming camps with the bloody charges at night, you know, with that cable. We'd done them jobs, upsetting the poor beggars. All sorts of different things. And then we had to make our way to Jordan to destroy that really, well, they said it was underground hospital, I don't know what the hell it was. And we had that big dumps of nitroglycerin, tons of bloody stuff. But being a warm climate, this bloody stuff sweat, there's sugar in it, you know, and the floors absolutely shone with it. Well, one, we couldn't attempt to do anything with, because to walk in there, I mean, it'd be suicidal to walk about on that stuff. And I say we got a diesel rag and threw in there and set fire to it and taking a good walk in case there was a detonator laying about, you know, because that's the only thing what will set it off. One of them bloody pins could be in there would do that, you know, so you're never sure. But as I say, in Syria and that part, when we was at Haifa, I nearly lost my bloody self there, that's stupid. At the bottom of Mount Carmel, the lads had a semi permanent camp there and made half a dozen drums and tied them together and made themselves a diving board, you know. I went out, but they didn't tell me not to dive deep. Of course, I jumped off and went down. Christ, I got into a current, I went into the bank, through a tunnel in the bank, and out the other side. Most of the time I got up, I was out. They got me on and sort of got me round. All that coastline is like that. There's a big undercurrent down so far, you know, like open broads. You go on that broad, that's that way. But underneath, the water's going that way. If you get in there, people get in a bit of a mess, you know, because undercurrent. Well, that was one there, bottom of Mount Carmel. Mount Carmel. There are 10 disciples on there. 10 commandments, I mean. That's the only thing I ever accepted. And it was hoped if everybody had one of them in every town, there wouldn't be half the bloody trouble there is now, you know. That's the way you used to look at things, you know. Because going into Palestine and, I went in there and the mess. I walked down one street, blowing up the bloody nips, you know. What do you call Jerusalem? That would have been a bit of a crazy do and all. Officer said, right, who can drive? This guy said, I can. So I jumped in with him. We went up the what called Seven Sisters into Jerusalem. I thought, you'll never drive a ready vehicle in your life. And when we got into Jerusalem, the dome there, there's a big island in front of it. He went right across the bloody thing. I said, right, that's good enough for me. I said, you're going back, but I'm certainly not going back with you down the Seven Sisters, because, you know, I said, you'll never driven ready. Well, it got us out of it, didn't it? I said, well, yeah, I might do, but, you know, you got some crazy buggers amongst you, you know. Volunteer said he could drive, he'd never driven his ruddy life, you know. Oh, you get him. I certainly didn't go back with him. No way.
What was the attitude of the locals towards you while you were in the Middle East?
Which ones?
In the various different areas.
Well, he was mostly involved with the youngsters, you know, the children, but, you know, I used to say that English were lazy regards, you know, being taught, but I was forgetting English is a basic language in the world itself, you know, because they can be taught English. One, right? We think we should know everybody language we go through. Well, that'd be a bloody joke, wouldn't it? Because I've been, well, I say 14 different countries. I've never had a problem from getting from A to B because the little children understand you as much as anybody. Upsap or so-and-so, you know. See, but there was always off the boxies, they call it, you know. They know what they were about. You don't find no problem going from one part of the country to another. I've never, you know, you can go right through. I mean, Christ, nobody's been much further right through from Persia, Damascus, Syria, down Gaza, down to Egypt, I never found it. In fact, it's so funny, the Suez Canal, I nearly got involved there, because the firm here, Bobis, which was the company owned Vickers, we're on the Suez Canal, working on a bridge from this town. I almost think I could have got out of what I was in and got with them, you know, because they were short of labour. There was another question, a couple of times I could have gone out of that into something else, you know, especially the bloody fire brigade business in London, when them poor buggers were committing suicide doing that stupid thing up on them valves, they come in and ask us lot for volunteers to join. Oh, thank you. Yeah, they were, Vickers, they were working on the Suez Canal, doing some sort of bridge, you know.
Did you ever experience any hostility towards British rule or occupation?
Not really. I don't think there were many places where. Because it was the younger generation was all over you. The older generation didn't want no part of you, sort of thing. It was just the youngsters. After, you know, I was in Bucksies and all that sort of malarkey, you know. I sort of bought them the Jaffa oranges off that little kid. That was a laugh, I didn't finish about that. I took them from Basra right across to Damascus into Haifa. And when I met this unit that was experimental demolition where I went in, posted into, the fellas, assuming, you know, my billet and all that, they said, "What have you got there?" I said, "Oranges, do you want one?" They laughed like hell. I said, "What's wrong?" They opened the door and there was trucks going down the road. And like we caught sugar beet about, they were ruddy oranges, you know, going down the big press door run, I don't know, into Haifa. Lordy loads of ruddy things. And I thought I'd got something worthwhile with 34 ruddy Jaffas. I caught about 1,000 ruddy miles. You know, it's all a joke, you know. They laughed like hell when they saw what I said, "Well, these minor Jaffas." No. No, no, you know, some part of it wasn't too bad, you know, although it was a ruddy mess, you know, no part of it. But you gradually sort of, well, I say 6 years, you gradually sort of adapted to it because you've got no choice, you know, you had to make the best of what you've got, you know. And the point is, it all depends what you got involved with. For some things are, you know, a bit naughty, you know, like that viaduct. I think that was one of the worst, creeping down a tunnel, playing about with that stuff, when you know if you touch it or just attempt to lift it, it'll go up. Simple as that, you know. And I say, that can, I mean, that's as bad as bomb disposal. Well, not more, but, you know, because you know there's hell in all ways that can be triggered off. You don't know if it's time is on, you don't know if it's pressure switches or pull switches, just the same. You lift something and pull that plug out and up it goes, you know. Well, we weren't warning in other camps about it, but we was wide open to the bloody lot. Especially that stupid fountain pen. I thought that was filthy. A fellow losing his eyesight and face. I mean, if you get killed, you get killed, but get maimed like that. You know, that was over. Italians brought that bloody thing out. And I say we warned them if they saw him, not attempt to use them as far as that goes. They'd pick them and give them to somebody who knows what to do with them, you know. And detonate the bloody things off. I don't understand the Tanners bringing that out, you know. I didn't think they were that sort of. Filthy thing on the quiet when you think you're going to write with it and it explode in your face, you know. There.
Did the experimental demolitions unit you were with have a particular purpose? It was
that was the one with Rodwell, you know, experiment. That was, well, when I went into it, it was, I think abbreviation on that was EF&G, and I'm sure it was War Office Appointment. I think a lot of their engagements with War Office attachments, I don't know for sure, but why the EF&G? Because it went EF&G Kent Troops, but then it was experimental demolitions. Well, it was, because I mean, we played about with every type of explosive there was, you know, and Gaza was at least three big hell of a dumps of, say, nitroglycerine, you know, when you opened it up, and some of the floors were, you know, shining like hell, and you knew what that was, you know, and you were very cautious about going in, because walking about on that stuff, you know, this is lavender. Well, you drop it, I mean, it'll go, but I mean, I don't like, I wouldn't want to experiment what happened if you walk on it. No, I was loaded. Why it was there, I don't know. I said sometimes, pity they didn't leave it there, because I wouldn't have been in trouble. When I hear that, I always think, oh, guys, and I think about the headache I have there, I'm making them bloody vibe or something. Now, Rockwell, I don't know what he had in his head after he said, God sent that heart and said, war's going this way and that, we're now in MO4. And that meant nothing to us, you know. What the hell would MO4 mean? No more an F and G, you know, E, G and F sort of thing, you know. But we gradually had to find out what we were, you know. As I said, we gradually found out if you went on your own, I don't know how that sifted through, you'd get commission of a captain. Well, I suppose that would come out captain's pay. You wouldn't get 3 pips for it. I don't know. But that was the talk. Plus, you know, fellas disappearing, you know, and not knowing where they're going. And as I say, when I dropped into blooming Greece, and I saw, what's his name, on that bit of board at the bottom of the Parthenon, I thought, he must have volunteered or got, you know, pulled into it, because I never see him go, and that's the sort of thing would happen, you know, they just disappear.
When was it that you were in Greece?
Hmm?
When was it that you got to Greece?
Well, it'd be on there. All the dates are on there somewhere. I would be getting on towards 44, but can I tell you why? That part was partly the end of war, because they start talking about what age you were for the mobs, because the second front had gone on, and it was the war was on the, more or less the finish, because in Greece is where I got the mobbed, because when I went from Athens to Foggia on that blooming bomber on the scaffold board to Foggia, I caught another plane from there home. When I saw them South Africans, I shook hands with them. Oh, Christ. They went to their plane, it went up, I don't know what the hell happened, it cut out and it come down, smack, and no bugger got out, killed the bloody lot of them, you know, and that was our turn to go, and we had to go to this here blooming bomber with the bomb doors open underneath, and get up and underneath and on the scaffold, but when we see the pilot, we thought enough of the ruddy plane. But the pilot didn't look 20 years old, you know. Christ. And anyway, he got us up. And we were sitting on this board. And the body along there was two lines, fuel lines, with two joints there. What we call compression fittings. I know what they are, compression fittings. Well, I suppose the vibration of the plane would upset them joints. I know that. I know I've been mixed with them. But we're sitting there. I got a little Air Force fellow there. We were very old. White's a bloody shading wood, bought the boat. And the plane got up. But all of a sudden, I think he wanted to lift itself. And these ruddy joints, they sprayed all over us. And of course, we shouted, what the, you know, down to the pilot too. I say, it's all right, it's all right. They'll go off in a minute. He's got the boosters on. I say, Christ's sake, tidy bloody maintenance. We're getting showered of bloody fuel, you know, because they put the boosters on and the pressure, you see, to get the lift. But they come out there, well, we were soaked, you know. We were just, right, all right, bloody paraffin sort of, you know. Jesus. It's all a lot of luck. That poor little rat fellow next to me, you know, why is that there? Had a funny bloody seat, no scaffold in the bloody bomb racks. Short planes, really.
You were in Italy before you got to Greece, is that right?
Oh, yeah, all the way up on the west coast with the Polish Army Division. We were right up front with them because we were there, you know, shelling with the tanks. And I said the women were feeding them. And we used to go like that to the women, but they never responded because they looked at the poor buggers and looked at them, they never had any sleep, you know. Because they were pressurised, that ruddy lot, them poles were up on that west, east coast. They went the whole length of the way up until we got to Rimini and Ancona and around that area. And that's it. We used to admire them, women, the way they worked, you know, because they were running around with 3 tonners with all the bloody ammunition for the fellows, you know, for the tanks and that. And they went right up with them. And they looked buggered. Well, they were absolutely shattered, the women were. You could see that. Didn't look like they had slept or, well, in a hell of a mess. And we used to go like that, but they didn't want to know. We were trying to praise them for what they were doing, but they didn't get no response for that.
What was your role at the time?
What?
What was your role?
Sapper all the way. That was enough. Well, we're mostly all sappers, you know. If there was anybody with, you know, commission and whatnot, that was stabilised right through. Sappers more or less stayed as he was because, you know, he was jumped from one. See, the point was, you never stop with one unit. Same as I was saying. I've been in about how many units have I been involved with, you know, on the quiet? You know, I've had changes in some. See, when you go into some units, you stay with them all the time, don't you? But me, going into Norway, losing that division, getting transferred, going into Holdings, getting whipped off the blooming ice, that left that department. Come out of Iceland, back into Holdings, down to Shellhaven, out of that compartment, back to blooming. I got issued to, well, Persia. Then when I get from Persia, I get sent to Basra to join the experimental demolition. Then I'm in from demolition, then I get into bloody MO4. You see, I'm talking, I never stabilised with one unit all the time. It was jockeying from one to another, you know. And that's why, you know, I got involved so pretty much, because what I was, well, that's just the way it worked out, you know. I would have rather been in one company all the way through, like the majority of them are. You know, they join one unit and they go right through the campaign. But when you jock it around, like I did, from one unit to another, different to this one, different to that one, Christ's sake, you never knew where it was, as I say. And when you finished in that last one, and not knowing what the hell you were in, because you're not told nothing, and when you come out, what did happen? because when Ron was doing that story, you'll see there's no Palestine Gaza on there. So I said, well, there's no Palestine Gaza. So it got onto records, you know. And so they said, what was he in? So I said, well, Rod will put us in demo four. They said, well, you've got your answer. We're not allowed to divulge. If you want to go into that, we'll give you the phone number of their archives in Surrey. So I thought, well, forgive me, I'll just ring. I rang. Yes, I can look in the archives. There's hundreds all of them. But it cost me £60 a day to open them up. Work up one out. Much as I don't, you know. Why £60 a day for me to look at a record to see what I've been in? That's your MO4. It's a funny setup, isn't it?
How much contact did you have with the Italian population?
Oh, pretty good. They weren't bad at all, because I tell you what, when I went up to Ancona and Milan and round that way, what happened, the war was gradually coming to a close, you know, because all the musical folks in Milan, which was a, you know, typical musical, you know what it's like, and one of my mates was Ernest Hemingway. And he was a bit, you know, highbrowish like. And I said, he said, Jim, are you coming with me next door? He said, they're holding this and that. I said, well, it's a bit classical for me, you know. He said, no. He said, well, you're wrong. It's going to be a hell of a mixture. And what it was, that was in Ancona, a hell of a place, and the balconies, a hoot, went. And what it was, all the orchestras got together, assembled in there, and we had a session there, and hell bells, it was smashing, you know. And the people, oh no, I got on all right with the Italian people, as far as I go, because I always remember one fellow, he made the Scarlatti piano accordions, you know. It was near where we was built. I could hear this, da, 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 and I knew the guy I had by myself, you know. And I went upstairs and I see him. He was making the ruddy things, you know. And no problem, you know. The people I met there, I never had no problem with them. They were all right, you know. But you see, the Italians really were goaded into that ruddy war, you know, through Mussolini and that bit where they would go. The top brackets again. It's not the people themselves, you know. Because, no, Italians, I didn't find it hard work, you know. Well, I mean, I escalated through hell and all of it, the whole East Coast from south, you know, after leaving blooming Egypt, the whole line of that east coast right up to Rimini, you know, Rome, Milan, Rimini, yeah. And I met them, but halfway up were more or less peasants because they were the wine area, you know, where they got the vineyards and all that stuff, you know. And no, there were no problem. We didn't find no problems there. Well, we didn't.